The following podcast is brought to you by the new AT&T.
Is Meredith really dead? And will life in Seattle Grace Hospital ever be the same? We'll have the straight scoop on all that and more in today's official Grey's Anatomy podcast, hosted by ABC.com. Part two of this three-part arc ended literally at a heart-stopping moment, and with it comes more questions than ever before. Lucky for us, though, executive producers Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers are here once again to help us sort through the wreckage. And though they may not have answers to all the questions, they do have some hints to help keep us afloat until next week's episode, entitled Some Kind of Miracle. That episode airs Thursday, February 22nd from 9 to 10 p.m. on ABC, and can be found the next day at abc.com. Here now are Shonda and Betsy.
Hey!
Hey! I'm Betsy Beers.
I'm Shonda Rhimes.
And this is Grey's Anatomy. I just want to point out that Chris, who helps us every week on the podcast, has some very, very spiffy new equipment.
Fancy new equipment.
He used to come in with essentially what looked like a 1952 tape recorder, and we used to do it. But apparently, the good folks over at Touchstone ABC have sprung for this amazing piece of equipment with actual CDs.
Well, what I think is happening is that not only are you moving up in the world in terms of your importance, but podcasts are moving up in the world.
I think podcasts are getting finally a little bit of the respect they deserve with a big old fancy machine. And
you wouldn't believe how fancy this machine is.
It's very fancy.
And yet portable.
It's portable, and it's making coffee, which is just bizarre. Also, I'm just going to say Chris looks very saucy today with his earphones, and he's wearing a very nice sweater. So
that's true.
It is. It's good. So we just want to say hey to Chris because he's here every day
and
we do this.
And don't dare edit this part out.
Yeah, because it's really important that it's there.
We're here to talk about Drowning on Dry Land.
Which it just aired.
Just aired. Episode 2 of 3.
And I have to say selfishly, I know you wrote it, but I have to say selfishly because I didn't. It's one of my favorite episodes of all time just because it's just one of my favorite episodes of all time. It's in terms of got everything. Absolutely everything.
I certainly won't disagree with your feeling that it's one of your favorite episodes of all time.
This is great about actually being the person who doesn't write. I can actually say that, and it doesn't sound like I'm bragging, because it's really, I think that, first of all, it's got one of the best endings of any episode I've ever seen in my life.
Which we love.
Which we absolutely love.
Really, really proud of.
And I think we said last week that when we actually dump a character in the water, they're not going to jump up
and spit goldfish out of their
mouth. Goldfish or guppies.
I feel pretty strongly about that, and I feel like if we suggest to you that we're going to throw Meredith in the water, then damn it, we're going to drown her.
We've got to do something which is really worth it.
But also just there's a journey here for Meredith that I think is really important and really interesting. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say up until Meredith's mother showed up and got lucid. God, Meredith always seems so dark and she seems a little neurotic and a little bit whiny. Why? And if you understand where Meredith's coming from and you really see her past and you get where she is, you get that she's a girl from a slightly dark place.
Yeah, and I think what's great is, when we talked about this a little bit last week, but I think what's great too is that in the past few episodes, the first certainly part of the season, she's actually really tried her best to be
cheerful, hard to be bright
and
shiny
Meredith.
She really has.
And I think the first revelation is when she had a fight with Derek and she honestly thought he would leave her because she had a fight, which is the first time you really realize that this is a girl who's never had a relationship before and never had a positive real relationship before.
But also there's a really interesting aspect to sort of the fantasy of that, which is that she always wanted to be with Derek. She always, you know, they had all this great passion and they always wanted to be together and they were always kept apart by circumstances. And now they just get to be together, which is sort of like riding off into the sunset. And now we're showing you what happens after people ride off into the sunset, which is that you wake up next to them and you think that their breath smells and they tell you you snore. And it's not easy.
And like, you have to keep working.
Reality
in this
suddenly comes in. And happily ever after is not an actual thing.
Absolutely. There was this old play called The Fantastics, which the whole point was the first act was this incredible romantic fantasy, and the second act was, oh my God, I got to live with this for the rest of my life. And it reminds me of that in that, first of all, that was like 900 years ago, so there you go. But it was a really wonderful musical, but it's a great thing to sort of see her struggle with that and then see her struggle with her mother. And then that what comes out of this is literally life and death.
Yeah.
You know, that's what emerges from that, which is pretty incredible.
And I've been sort of saying, you know, happily ever after is crap for a long time in the writer's room. Just to be clear, like, where they're going. And for her, the place where she is such a, to me, it's such a dark, interesting place for a character to be.
Yep.
And I think it's great to take her on this journey.
And it's also, you look at, over the course of this episode, too, you look at the way different people deal with trauma, you know, which I think is really interesting. Because you look at, actually, Izzy at the end of the episode.
Well, I think you're watching this very interesting thing of Izzy's sort of being reborn. Izzy's being reborn. She's getting her confidence back. She has this big victory. She's pulling it back together. Izzy is coming back into being Izzy. At the same time, Meredith is dying.
It's disappearing. It's like literally disappearing.
Literally disappearing.
And it also speaks to Izzy's speech at the end of the episode, though, which is, I believe, you know,
yes.
that she I believe that
believing
that somehow,
we survive
and
is that how that, we survive.
That is the core of Izzy and always has been the core of Izzy and how I think she got through Denny's death. And how
she got through everything.
How she got through everything. And it was when she looked at Bailey and said, you know, I am both. I am not one kind of surgeon. I'm both people. And that's not going to change about me. It's an incredible contrast, you know, that George, who is much more of a fretter, you know, by nature.
Yeah. Izzy is a very sort of, what I think is very interesting is that Izzy is this very optimistic sort of little beacon of light, little beacon of hope in the middle of everything. And always has been, even in her darkest moments. There's something about her that sort of leans towards the light. And the rest of our characters in their own way sort of lean the other way, except for maybe Bailey.
And also I sort of feel like Alex, who spends a good part of his life in denial of a lot of these things.
Of
his emotional feelings. And there's this amazing moment in this episode, which honestly I think it's such a clarifying kind of crystallizing moment where he's standing and there are all of these people around him and there's the board and you see for the first time he's taking in the horror because everybody kind of keeps accusing him of not caring or dealing with it and doesn't stuff affect you at all. And you see this incredible moment where it does, where it really, really penetrates.
Mm-hmm. And then you have that great moment at the end where he tells Addison that he would notice if she went missing.
Oh, which is so
great. Which is great.
And you look at Addison throughout this episode and you think she really understands the impact this would have on her if Meredith dies, too.
Yeah,
you know?
Which I think is really interesting.
And Derek and how, I mean, what is Derek's life going to be like?
Well, what's fascinating is that, you know, in the last episode, you know, Meredith sets up trying to save me. I don't need rescuing. You're not my knight shining, whatever. And he says, I am. And you have him desperately trying to save her. And whether or not he survives what happens to Meredith is going to be very interesting.
Well, absolutely. And look, it's purely manifested by that moment where they have to kick him out of the room. And he literally has nothing to do. He can't save her. And he looks at Burke and says, you got to go in there for me.
Also, that's who Derek is.
Yeah.
For Derek, Derek's definition of himself is that he is Meredith's knight in shining, whatever. So if he is, and now he can't be because there's no Meredith or because he's failed at it, where does he go from there? How do you deal with that kind of aftershock, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, exactly. After actually you've sacrificed so much to commit to somebody. And I don't think you can underestimate ever what the amount of strength and kind of maturity it's taken for Derek to really commit to this relationship too, which is, I think, what you realize when his sister came to visit and you find out a little more about Derek and how Derek operates, that he's really trying to have, like Meredith, he's really trying to have a different kind of a relationship.
Yeah, he really, really is.
And grow in a different way as a doctor as well, with the hopes that he's going to end up being chief of the hospital. And so it's going to be, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in terms of that.
Let's talk about the last moment of the episode.
Yeah, because I think that we'd be pretending
now,
if we weren't focusing on that a little.
I could talk to you about a whole host of literary thoughts and metaphoric.
Yeah, could you talk to us about a bunch of metaphors and literary thoughts? Because I'm really curious to know
why I chose to go where we went and what happens at the end of the episode. But instead, I think I'm just going to talk about the two most important things ever, which are Denny and Dell are back.
Oh, my God. Can
Which
I say?
For both Betsy and I was a slightly religious experience.
It's pretty amazing.
It was our own little, yes, special moment.
Pretty amazing.
To have Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Kyle Chandler walking our little campus again. And
it was awesome. And kind of a dead sandwich.
And that's disrespectful.
I don't think it is. I'm very, very complimentary.
No, it really
in terms
was a
of,
hot dead sandwich.
It was a hot dead sandwich. I mean, come on.
But also, just having them in the same scene together is fantastic.
Which is the most unbelievable treat that shot. That,
yeah, and they were
them.
Really wonderful to show up and do that scene and give us that fun.
Exactly. It was really nice of both of them, both of whom are busy fellows.
Yeah,
you know?
And took a little bit of time out of their busy schedules to do something important for us.
So that was great. And We love Kyle regardless, because Kyle's great, and we love Jeffrey Dean Morgan regardless. So it's all that was really, really good, and that was really a great moment for us. And I also love that moment of
her realization.
Oh, blank.
Yeah. Yes, which is going to be great.
Which is phenomenal. And who the heck knows what's going to happen next week?
So yes, what do you think is going to happen next week?
You know, it's so interesting. I'm on the edge of my seat on that one but I'm definitely going to watch, like I hope you guys are.
I don't even know what to tell you about next week. Perhaps the show will now only just be called Anatomy.
Heavenly Grays.
Heavenly Grays. But I like to point out once again, as I pointed out at the end of the last episode, we mean a little bit of the business.
We do tend to mean a little bit of business, and I'd simply like to know if I went in the water and I woke up, gosh, I really hope Dylan and Denny are there for me, because that's... I don't think they would be, though, technically.
Yeah.
But that's a...
It's what I'd like, anyway.
And definitely, yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. Yeah. You know... There's something, too. There's this other thing in this episode that I think is so great that I think it's so cool you came up with, going back to the kind of body of the episode, which is Izzy drilling the holes in the head of the guy, which is like...
We were very excited about that.
And I also find that the entire graduation of Izzy back into the world of surgery, when they hand her the real drill and say, do the honors, I literally cry.
For some reason, like, there's something so charming about... Poor Izzy being stuck. You know, she's on this ferry, which is smoking, and this guy's trapped under this car, and they're these wonderful guys, really well acted. And she's got to drill holes in this guy's head using just a regular drill, and she's scared out of her mind.
It's just surreal. The whole thing is just surreal. And she's wiping the drill like 500 times, and I think it's Mark says, you've already wiped it 500 times.
Yeah. And she's just so nervous. There's something really lovely about that. There's also something really lovely in the moment when George finds the missing boy.
Yeah.
And he's been safely sort of in the hands of George's wife the entire time, in Callie's hands the entire time. I just, for me, like, there was just something very charming and lovely about that whole thing.
Well, and
that everything George should be looking for in life is right there with Callie, was sort of the point.
In his own backyard.
Yeah, in his own backyard, which
absolutely.
I thought was great.
That and also the fact that the connection between George losing patience and how George, in that first pilot episode, said, guaranteed, you know, the guy, the family, that everything would be all right, and he couldn't guarantee it. And he does it again, but he owns it.
Yeah.
This time
he says, if I save her life by telling her that her kid's fine, then I'm okay with that.
And it shows this amazing growth in the character to me, which comes...
George has really become a man.
Totally. I mean, his dad died. He's married. He's
really come of age. We've really watched him struggle through, which is wonderful.
Which is... It's incredible how far he's come. And in a lot of ways, I think he's aggressively come further than a lot of characters. You know?
And I do think it's interesting that you know, Izzy can say to him... I believe that you made a horrible mistake marrying Callie. And if you look at his face, there is some truth to that. And what that's going to bring to bear for him is going to be really interesting. But at the same time, there are these wonderful moments, and Callie does bring him such joy.
Absolutely.
Which I thought was a very nice way of connecting all of that.
Absolutely. So there's also... Oh, there's just this beautiful song at the end, and there's a lot. Also, you know, we didn't mention this last week, but we're really grateful to, there's this company called Stargate
that
did our CGI, and I have to be honest and say, a lot of the cool stuff that you saw last week and some stuff this week.
Yeah, not even just, I mean, if you go back and watch last week's episode, Walk on Water, I'd say about 70% of the episode is shot on green screen, and then there's special effects that put in the background.
They shoot plates and layer them in. And they did an amazing job. And I also have to say, and I don't own the company, so this is not a plug.
Yeah.
But I also have to say, man, they worked quickly.
They did a good job and worked really fast.
They hauled back.
Meredith did not go into water at the end of Walk on Water. Meredith went onto a piece of green paper that Stargate then turned into water.
And, you know, what's great is you've never really enjoyed an episode until you see an episode with green paper behind every shot.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting to sort of see the interns be like, look what's up there.
It's terrible.
Holy mother of green
big
paper.
Piece of green paper. My God, that's terrifying, that green paper. It's green.
But it was also really spectacular for us because it allowed us to do Stargate's expertise allowed us to do stuff with this episode that we never would have been able to do in a normal way.
No.
We certainly, while we adore the city of Seattle, there's no way we could have gone to Seattle and done
what we had
something
to do
like this on this scale and this quickly.
And truthfully thrown actors
below water. What was wonderful was that, you know, the city of Seattle did allow us to come and shoot plates there.
And was incredibly gracious and helped us out so much, which was terrific. And that the nice folks at Touchstone, Barry Jossen, the whole Gary and all those guys, Gary French, all suggested that this would be a really, really great alternative. So we're glad we did it.
Yep.
Otherwise, we would have been play acting in the backyard and kind of grim.
Otherwise, it would have been the episode in which you'd seen me with my daughter's teeny tiny little dolls.
Exactly.
You know, going to play, which she calls peoples. We're playing with the peoples and sort of being like, Meredith says, and then Derek says.
Exactly. Wait, I'm throwing Meredith in the swimming pool.
Look Meredith in the water.
It's bad. Where's my drill?
The other people who were really awesome were the Bermans, who created the amazing face that you see on Jane Doe.
Yeah,
while really scary to look at, is medically accurate in every way.
And Linda Klein and the whole group and the Bermans were incredibly, and Zoe Clark is also a doctor and medical advisor.
And for those of you who are going, who is that woman underneath all that scariness?
Okay, such an awesome actress named Elizabeth Reaser.
Yeah, who is fantastic and let us put her face in that thing.
Yeah, which is essentially a little bit like actually being in a coffin.
It's really fairly claustrophobic and yet still manages to act.
She acts, and if you look at her eyes, if you keep going back and looking at her eyes, I have actually never seen somebody with so much around her act with her hands and her eyes so incredibly effectively.
She's really lovely. We were really lucky to get her.
And, exactly, really grateful. But thanks to those Bermans, because they do almost all of our makeup and special prosthetics. If you liked the boy with the tree, if you were a fan of the guy squirting leg,
Bonnie and Tom.
If you
stuck
can't
in a
forget
pole.
Bonnie and Tom stuck in a pole. If you liked Leonidas Boy,
the joy of Meredith with her hand inside the body.
You really want to give a big shout out to those two, because we wouldn't know what the hell we were doing without them. And once like Shonda's little characters, peoples, we would probably have like big oven mitts that we'd be using as, you know, surgical problems if we didn't have the Bermans. Yes. Maybe go with the lobsteritis boy, because he has an oven mitt on.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Clearly I need more coffee today. Well, we're really looking forward to talking to you next week, because
we have a lot to talk about after next week.
It's going
to
be great.
But for now, if you just need a little hit, I would just freeze frame on the lovely shots of Danny and Dylan in the end.
Yeah, you really just might want to do a screensaver of that,
or,
by the way.
Frankly, Dempsey coming out of the water carrying Meredith.
Hello.
Let me tell you, he let them hose him down and then come up like 47 times. It was not easy.
Which was amazing.
Which was amazing and beautiful. And he did like nobody's business.
Now, he's, as always, was a phenomenal sport.
Yeah, and Ellen Pompeo, who got in tanks of water and stayed there for hours upon hours upon hours upon end while we shot her
and simply
coming up and going down.
So it's clear, like, we shot with the green screen out in Santa Anita, which is an area sort of outside of where we're shooting.
This was shot in a tank here.
So that was shot in a tank here, but while we were shooting in Santa Anita, it was really, really cold and very, very windy.
It's the coldest it's ever been in Los Angeles.
Absolutely. And those guys were out there pretty much in kind of lousy conditions.
Every day, all day.
Every day, all day, for quite a few days. And did an amazing job. And also Rob Korn, who directed these two episodes.
We did our whole crew of rock stars, which was fantastic.
Which is great.
Yes, Bossy McBossy, Rob Korn directed these
episodes. Bossy McBossy really stepped up to the bossy
plate. So if you don't like the episodes, I think that you should send your mail to Rob Korn at... No, I'm just joking.
Oh, boy.
Because I think they're genius, but don't write me.
I did see it because Rob did a great job. And Rob is an incredible multitasker, which means he still managed to be bossy and direct the episode.
And if there's something you didn't like, it was because I said, no, Rob, we should do it the other way. And Rob said, no, Shonda, we're going to do it my way.
Because he was being slightly bossy.
Because he's so bossy. Right?
But also remember, Rob is very kind.
And terribly, terribly creative. And actually... very awesome for allowing me to call him Bossy McBossy all the time.
Because actually, if you guys ever met Rob Korn, he's the opposite
of
Bossy.
The reason I call him Bossy McBossy is he's the opposite of Bossy. It's ironic.
It is. It's actually, you know, that goes back to how deep and literary you are.
Deep.
Because you actually use the word ironic in an incredibly accurate, three-dimensional kind of sense, which is awesome.
I tried.
And that makes sense. So once again, since we've humiliated ourselves up to the brink of no return, or maybe the point of no return, I think we'll go now. What do you think?
Okay.
You think? We could talk for another 6 hours.
I just feel like in the episode in which we've, you know, Meredith's dead, we should talk about more things, but there's nothing we can tell you because she's dead.
That's true. And if we told you anything else, then our heads would explode.
Yeah.
Because that's the way they've got us set up here at Grey's Anatomy.
Yep.
We're committed to that.
We're committed to that.
All right. Like a drummer on Spinal Tap. like, that's amazing.
On that note, I'm Shonda Rhimes.
I'm Betsy Beers.
This is Grey's Anatomy.
That's it for this week. Join us again next time for more answers from beyond. And don't forget, you can revive last week's episode at abc.com. Some Kind of Miracle airs next Thursday, February 22nd, from 9 to 10 p.m. only on ABC.
This is for Mac McKinney. Mac, your chance has passed to play professional ball, but you can live vicariously through Vince Young's rookie year. You've obviously seen how he plays. Now see how he lives with AT&T Home Turf. Just go online to attblueroom.com/sports for exclusive access into your favorite athlete's worlds. See inside Vince's home and check out the AT&T technology that keeps him connected. So that's Mac's world. For everyone who's not Mac, if we can deliver his favorite quarterback to him, we've got what it takes to deliver your favorite athletes to you. The new AT&T. Your world delivered.